The Bears get their signature win. Lamar Jackson gets it done in his first start. The Cowboys are winning games their way. And what happens in Washington after the Alex Smith injury? We've got all that and much more from Week 11 on the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am Gary Gramling. He is Andy Benoit. This was Week 11 Sunday. We're starting the Sunday nighter here, Andy. It was a bit of a bummer of a week when it came to injuries and stuff like that. But the Sunday nighter was I feel like it was encouraging. It was a new day in the NFC where the Bears sort of solidified themselves as certainly the front runner in the NFC North, but also a team that could make a run toward the Super Bowl. I don't want to put them in the same class as the Saints and as the Rams, but this defense is kind of it has a little bit of a feel to, you know, 2017 Jaguars type of feel to it.
It's getting there. I think our listeners would say, you know, we've been on this defense for a couple years now, saying this is the direction they're going, and that Khalil Mack trade changes it. What I would be really encouraged about Monday morning when I'm the Bears and I'm putting on this film is this is a game we lost in week one. We were playing the Packers, a division foe, Sunday night. We were establishing our style of play. We got out to an early start on these misdirection stuff, which no defense has been ready for early in the games yet this season. And against Green Bay, they caught up to us and they got used to it. And that happened a little bit with Minnesota in this game, but we won this one. We still pulled it out and we did it playing our style. And this time we leaned on our defense. So it's the same Bears team as week one stylistically. It's a much better Bears team. We talk all the time about the really good teams, how they evolve over the course of the season. I think the three teams that have done it the most, or I'm assuming the Patriots will be one of them, so I'm putting them in there. The Rams have done it this year, the Chiefs, and I think the Bears have also, the Panthers as well. The offenses are really evolving this year.
I do want to make sure that we give the Bears proper credit here after I ask a bunch of questions to try and poke some holes in this team a little bit right now. But offensively, what do you think of this? I like when they sort of get a little bit smash mouth and get that going a little bit. My heart is in my throat anytime Mitchell Trubisky drops back still.
Well, I think he knows how to run. I think he can be elusive. I think he falls well. That, remember when Robert Griffin was in the NFL? I mean, he's in now, but when he was running around, the problem with him was that he didn't know how to fall. I know one GM said he runs like a hurdler, the way his legs come off the ground. He's so exposed. His limbs are in different directions. Trubisky's a little bit more of a Russell Wilson-type runner in terms of body compactness. He's also really good at it. I mean,
he's creative,
He is creative. I'm not a big fan of scrambling quarterbacks. I give him more leeway than I would other guys because I think there's a productivity to the scrambling, and I think he's doing a better job of self-regulating it right now. It was a crutch for him early in the season. It has not been a crutch the last few weeks. It's just been a resource.
Would you say that about tonight? You say that about the Sunday night game? I felt like it was becoming a bit of a crutch.
I don't think so. I would say that. Okay. The play that really sold it for me was the Allen Robinson conversion on 3rd and 8 late in the game. I think Robinson ran a curl route against Trey Wayne. So they threw at it quite a bit, actually, on 3rd down. They threw at him at the intermediate levels. Pressure came from the right. Vikings bring late disguised pressure. That's what they're best at. Trubisky calmly steps left. He's a right-handed thrower. He steps away from the pressure and within the pocket. It was very natural quarterbacking. I don't think that's what Trubisky would have done early in the season. I'm not saying he wouldn't have made the throw or attempted it, but there would have been a lot more wasted motion and reactionary feel to his initial movement. That play was just smooth, eyes downfield, knew when to get to the backside of his read, which is something else he's done a little bit more lately. He's now getting front side to back side smoother. I am encouraged about Trubisky. The one thing that gives me pause, Gary, is he does struggle with his command at times. There were a few balls that got away from him even in this game. He underthrew Robinson on a deep route, and then the very next throw he had, I think, was the one he sailed to Harris for the interception. So, and there were other throws in this game. He's not a consistent precision accuracy passer, and that does give you pause.
As far as attacking this defense, I was kind of surprised that the Vikings didn't come out tempo to start the second half. Because, I mean, look, you go all the way back to week one when the Packers made that big comeback when Rodgers was playing hobbled. It was all tempo. That kind of neutralized the pass rush to an extent. I was waiting for it from the Vikings. I don't want to overstate it because obviously the Bears are protecting a big lead and that they allowed some underneath throws that they might not have been so soft against had the game not been sort of comfortably in hand at that point. But I'm kind of just waiting for some to play tempo against this team for more than half a game at this point. And the Vikings really didn't get into it until they were, until the pick six after that, and they were down 16.
Because I agree with you. What's the thing we always say about the Bears defense is teams hate playing against them because they're so blurry in their zone coverages. You're never quite sure what zone you're looking at. And they put their two safeties back deep. And I think sometimes on this show, it's me that does this, Gary. We present the Bears as strictly a two-deep safety defense. They play a lot of single high coverage. Almost about half their snaps are single high, but almost everything begins out of a two-safety look. So that's why they feel like a two-safety defense all the time. And teams hate facing all the blurriness you see. Is the safety coming down? Is he not? Is he in the middle of the field? Is he tilted over? Where is everybody? You're never quite sure with the Bears. If you go hurry up, I would assume that eliminates a lot of that because that blurriness, you've got to have everybody on the same page defensively and communicating. If there's hurry up, there's not time for that. So you go into your default coverages. So I'm with you. I think that could be a formula. And what you mentioned about the pass rush, that factors in as well. Not every offense is equipped to go hurry up. I would assume Minnesota's would be.
Yeah.
So that'll be interesting, though, Chicago's opponents moving forward. Do they go hurry up against them?
No, that's I think that's what disappointed me the most about the Vikings tonight. I was disappointed. I mean, they picked up some penalties after the whistle tonight that were pretty dumb. Two of them might have cost them points. But yeah, it just it's one thing if you're the Jets with Sam Darnold or you're the Bills or you're the Dolphins playing Brock Osweiler and you don't want to go tempo with those guys. But this Vikings team was equipped for it, and they just didn't do it until it was a little too late in the game.
And this Bears discussion, by the way, it's going to solve itself with the defense because their schedule, and I'm not a big schedule guy, but I was looking up, all right, who do they face that might play tempo against them? They've got Detroit on the road on a short week, Thanksgiving. That'd be a great time to go hurry up, no huddle if you're the Lions. Then after that, it's at the Giants, not a great offense, but certainly one that can go no huddle and go fast if they want with Eli Manning. Then it's the Rams and Packers after that. So their next four games are challenging, especially those last two when they get back home to face the Rams and Packers. So we'll find out about the Bears here, but I'm optimistic for them. It's exciting to see a team get better within the context of its identity.
It is. All right. Before we move on, Andy, a lot of people like to get into the stock market, but maybe it seems a little overwhelming, a bit too intimidating. We have a solution. Robinhood, the investing app that provides a non-intimidating way for stock market newcomers to invest for the first time with true confidence. Other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, but Robinhood doesn't charge commission fees. Trade stocks and keep all of your profits. Robinhood has easy-to-understand charts and market data. Place a trade in just four taps on your smartphone. Robinhood is giving our listeners a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help build your portfolio. Sign up at 10things.robinhood.com. That's 10things.robinhood.com. All right, let's talk some Lamar Jackson here. This was something everyone was incredibly curious about coming to the day here. Lamar Jackson makes his first career start for an injured Joe Flacco. The Ravens snap a 3-game losing streak. They beat the Bengals. Andy, I'll just ask you the general question here. What were your impressions of Lamar Jackson?
He ran 27 times in the game. 27 yeah. rushing attempts. That's a lot for a big running back. That's where you start. I mean, I've never heard of that or seen anything like that in my life. Watching the game, I mean, I knew he was running a lot. You got the feel, and the offense was going through that, and the Bengals clearly were not ready for it in the first series. It's Marvin Lewis in his first game in 15 years calling defensive plays.
Yep.
You come out and you show them all these read option looks, which they didn't have those 15 years ago, and then they mix in some tempo themselves. Great tactic against the new defensive play caller. The Bengals got better against Jackson as the game went along. But, Gary, the discussion is, because I guess there's two parts. Is Jackson playing next week? Is he starting? We have to go over that. And then is this sustainable? Because I have to believe if they think Jackson's a starter moving forward, I don't think they would have ran him 27 times.
Yeah, I don't know.
A lot to unpack right here.
You have to build something on top of this as far as the passing game goes. They came out, they had an 11-play drive to start the game here. All of those 11 plays were rushing plays. They got a lead. They played with the lead for most of this game. The Bengals did end up coming back, so I guess it did play from behind. I don't know. I mean... 24
well,
points
the runs,
at home
Gary, the
against
runs
that
were just
Bengals
the plan.
Defense.
They weren't protecting a lead at any point. I mean, I know they
yeah.
had a lead,
oh,
but
oh,
they,
no,
they,
no.
they weren't taking the air out of the ball.
Absolutely, but the question is, you know, when you, I don't know who's coming up in their schedule, but when you go somewhere, you're down
Oakland.
Two touchdowns late in the second quarter, what's your plan going to be? You're going to have to figure out some way to throw the ball. I mean, this is a Bengals defense that has not been very good against the pass
yeah.
at all, and to only come up with 150 passing yards. He took a couple sacks. He had an INT. And it's all fine. I don't have a problem with Lamar Jackson is in terms of his development. I don't know if you can win enough games playing this style of football in 2018.
Yeah. I don't think you can. I think you have to evolve in the passing game a little bit. I understand why they did it this week, and I understand why it worked. And they got Oakland next week, a very similar defense to the Bengals and a much less talented version of the Bengals. So, in theory, it could work again. The Raiders linebackers, I mean, it's a rotation of sloppy guys. So, we could see it again, but there's no – point to it if it's not going to expand, and if he's the guy, if Jackson's the guy, and they want to make this transition with Flacco, who has not been a world beater this year, he's not looked very good mm-hmm. on film at times, in fact. So if they do want to do this, they'll become a run-based offense, multi-dimensional running game. We've talked a few times about how they've got coaches on staff who've done that before. Kaepernick's old offensive coordinator, Greg Roman, designs their running game now. Marty Morningwig, James Urban, their QB coach, Morningwig offensive coordinator. They both had Michael Vick in 2010. But Kaepernick in 2012 and certainly Vick in 2010, those guys were more advanced passers. Clearly what the Ravens were telling, because coaches tell you how they really feel by the plays they call, and what the Ravens were telling you in this game is Lamar Jackson, we don't think, is close to ready to run a full NFL passing offense. I mean, this was a big-time training wheels on passing game, and Jackson was spotty with that. He's so talented, though, that you might make it work. And remember when Kaepernick came in 2012, the league did not catch up to him for several weeks, and by the time they did, the Niners were making a playoff run, wound up going to the Super Bowl. So mobile QBs are hard to adjust to, even though we see them more now than we used to. They're still hard to adjust to.
I guess what I'd do, you have Oakland coming to Baltimore next week. Try to, I mean, that gives you some margin of error with what you're going to do out there. So I'd say try to build in a little more complexity in the passing game and you can probably come away with a win, even if that backfires a little bit. And then you kind of have your answer going forward. If you can make some progress and put yourself in a position where you actually have a decision to make before the following game, which would be at Atlanta, I guess that's what you're at, but...
I agree with the premise, even though it's got a little bit of a hint of that Patriots argument that you and I have about assuming you can beat an opponent, and so you change your game plan because you have that assumption. I don't believe in that necessarily, but I think the idea of kicking the can down the road on this decision, saying, oh, Joe needs another week to recover, we're going to have Lamar fill in for Joe, and really what you're doing is gathering more data on Lamar to decide who's going to be your quarterback in weeks 13 through 17.
Yeah, the schedule really played into this as far as it goes, too. I mean, he gets the Bengals and the Raiders at home back to back. That's a nice sort of that's a nice set of training wheels games right there to get going. It's going to be interesting, though.
Be interesting to see what happens with the Bengals too. It's a different discussion for a different day, but I understood why they made the coordinator change. I don't think the solution is Marvin Lewis. He's not going to be doing this next year if he's here. He'll have a new defensive coordinator. And, you know, there's just that staleness with the Bengals that we thought was going away after this last season, and it didn't. And here we go again. I guess we can just replay last year's Bengals conversations, actually. Maybe it won't be that. Maybe it'll be the exact opposite of interesting as I'm sorting this out now.
I was going to say, we can do a greatest hits episode after week 17 when we talk about the Bengals. Your confidence is important, and sometimes one change can make all the difference. Hair Club knows this, and they're inviting you to become part of the Hair Club family to see how getting the most out of your hair can change your life. Whether you're looking to revitalize the growth of your own hair or to learn more about the latest proven methods for hair replacement or restoration, Hair Club's professionally trained stylists, hair health experts, and consultants will craft a personalized solution to ensure you feel your best and get the most out of your hair. Look, as we move through our 20s and 30s, there are things in life that we can't control. Maybe you put on some weight because you can't get to the gym as often. Your knees start to go after all those pickup basketball games. These things affect your confidence, but your hair, that's something that you can control. So go to hairclub.com/10things today for a free hair analysis and a free take-home hair care kit, all valued at over $300. That's hairclub.com/10things for a free hair analysis and free hair care kit. hairclub.com/10things. Experience your hair and your life at its best only with Hair Club. I'm certain you'll love the club. Dallas Cowboys, Andy. I'm starting to rethink the Cowboys. I know I said earlier in the show, are the Bears going to be the 2017 version of the Jaguars? But the Cowboys are sort of going down that path as well. This defense is, they're kind of bordering on dominant. I think they might be as dominant as you can be right now in 2018 against some of the offenses they're facing.
They have a very defined scheme. It's a ton of homegrown players. Everybody on that defense has been within the organization and come up through the organization. They don't go out and sign a bunch of free agents and try to patch things up here and there. They've developed a lot of depth and a lot of unique talent. So these guys have all played together for several years. They're very well coached. I'm with you. I think it's an extremely intriguing defense. The two new factors this year that were not there before. One is Van Der Esch, and he was kind of there before in that they had his spot filled by Sean Lee. But Van Der Esch, I'm telling you, Van Der Esch has a little bit of a different dimension than Lee. Lee is rock solid, snap to snap, and because of that, he makes some big plays here, and he's a hugely important player. Van Der Esch has some game-changer feel to the way he moves and plays the game. So playmaker Van Der Esch, and then Byron Jones, our guy, who we kept loving on, and we loved him at slot corner and at safety, and oh, he's so versatile, he probably can even play regular corner. Well, it turns out he wasn't as consistent at those other positions when we loved him. They did move him to regular corner, and now he's become very consistent. So top corner, top linebacker, and then their pass rush and really their D-line as a whole is productive because it's got some talent, and they do a lot of what I call gap exchanges. If I'm lined up in the B-gap, I shoot over to the A-gap, and they crisscross you a lot. And that's a hard thing for offenses to deal with. And Rod Marinelli, he coaches that stuff better than anyone in the business.
Yeah, that pass rush was absolutely relentless in the first half of this game in Atlanta. I think maybe the Falcons adjusted to it. Maybe just, you know, when you've seen it for 30, 35, 40 snaps, you get a little bit used to what you're dealing with here. But, I mean, they overwhelmed that Falcons offensive line for the first probably 2.5 quarters of this game. And that was enough for the Cowboys to sort of win this game on their terms. Not only that, you know, they miss a PAT. Cole Beasley had a drop in the end zone that could have created some separation. And Falcons tied this one late. Cowboys mounted a drive, though. I mean, they are – this offense is making plays when it needs to make plays. It kind of reminded me of last week's win at Philadelphia, the way the Cowboys, you know, they did enough offensively, and it really didn't feel like it was – you know, it didn't feel like it was gimmicky offense. It felt like it was legitimate offense, and they just they create drives when they need drives, even if they're not going to go out there and score 45 points every week.
And I'll – put this out there, and we're not talking so much about what happened today because he had three catches for 36 yards, targeted five times. But Amari Cooper, in the macro view of this, my stance on it, I think you were with me on this, Gary, is that they traded a lot for the guy, thinking he's going to be a number one receiver when we think really he's probably a high-end number two, and therefore he's not going to change the entire dynamic of the receiving core. It's not going to have the domino effect that Dallas was hoping. We've seen at times there has been the domino effect, and the guys around Cooper have been better, and the coverages have been a little bit different, and Cooper has beaten some of those press coverages that he didn't always beat in Oakland. So I guess just as an idea to float, the Cooper trade looks better now than it did a few weeks ago. I'm not sold on it, but I do think there has been an uptick with the offense since he arrived, and I did not think that would have been the case originally.
Yeah, I think there was just something to be said for just adding another weapon here. I don't know. I hate to – it feels lazy to keep on making the Jaguars comparison, but it's almost like you look at the Jaguars offense, and, you know, I don't know if any of those receivers you'd look at and say, like, boy, this is – you know, this is a truly exciting guy right here. You just kind of like their three to four guys and, you know, like, okay, these are guys who individually can be dangerous in spots. So I feel like adding Cooper, you know, he's sort of the alpha of the beta receivers that they collected now, so that they have something, just a little bit more to work with at this point.
You know what you're like right now when somebody is dating someone and they might be the one and they're starting to fall freshly in love and they're just they're unbearable to hang out with because they bring every conversation back to that person they're dating.
Yep.
That's you with the Jacksonville Jaguars for some reason tonight. I don't know where this is coming from, but you've now compared them to are we three games in and you've brought them up on all this, three games on both sides of the ball.
This is the Jaguars episode. You didn't get the outline, Andy?
I have the outline. We ought to just move Jacksonville-Pittsburgh game up right now and get whatever's on your chest, whatever you're really wanting to say, unload it. Because I don't understand why we are beating around a Jacksonville Jaguars bush tonight.
I'm looking for teams who can win in a different way than just scoring a bunch of points this year. Like the Jaguars did. Like you know what it was? This is what it is. As I was watching the Jaguars and just watching that game slip away against the Steelers, a game that the Jaguars really looked like last year's Jacksonville Jaguars, and I just said Jaguars like 8 times in 12 words, and I apologize for that. But it was their kind of game, and, you know, it was Jalen Ramsey was outstanding, except for probably two plays the entire game that ended up costing them. And it was like, oh, you know, this team can still be really good. They can still beat the elite teams. They were so close to the Super Bowl last year, even with this quarterback who just isn't good. And I'm kind of searching for that team right now. So Dallas kind of reminded me of that. And then I saw the Sunday night game, and I was like, no, the Bears are the Jaguars now.
All right, are we good? Do we need to? Can we just like touch up the rest of the Steelers? Because we've accidentally gotten into the Steelers-Jags
we
game.
Have.
I propose we improvise and do that game next rather than what we had scheduled.
We will do that. We'll do that. Yeah. So the Jaguars, they jumped out on the Steelers. They, oh man, I mean this was. It was almost a fitting death for the 2018 Jaguars here. They jumped out. They led 16-0 late in the third quarter, and then they Antonio Brown got away for one play, 78-yard touchdown. Jacksonville still held on. They got a couple of stops, but too many possessions for the Steelers in the fourth quarter, and the Steelers end up making the full comeback, winning this one 20-16. The defense was really good. Ramsey played a great game. I will say this. We talked about Jacksonville early in the year when they had beaten the Patriots and it looked like they were going to have an outstanding season. And we talked about how late in games they were trusting Blake Bortles and teams were sort [S2] Yeah. [S1] Of presenting Blake Bortles with opportunities to throw. Bortles was taking advantage. Gosh, they did not let Bortles do anything. That being the Jaguars did not let Bortles try to do anything when they were holding on to this lead. A lot of it had to do with the offensive line was completely overwhelmed by the Steelers throughout this game. But I mean, this was they were desperately hanging on offense and just couldn't they couldn't convert first downs just keeping the ball on the ground. So this one got away from them. That's it.
That's all we got. That's all we got on the Jags tonight. Here's what I actually think it is. It's not that you're freshly in love and dating the Jags.
Yeah.
The other thing that people do when they talk about someone like this so much is when they're actually the person who they were with a long time and they're in love, they've been dumped, they're broken up from them. And so the next person they're dating, they make the king of the world or the queen of the world. And that's what the Bills had a bye week this week is what it is. And now I'm starting to understand why we've spent 8 minutes talking about the 3-7 Jacksonville Jaguars. It's because the Buffalo Bills aren't here and you're broken inside and you wonder if you'll ever be the same. And I get that. And we're going to we love you. So we're going to suffer through it. Jacksonville's O-line probably had no chance at all against a Steelers defense that's stacked along the D-line, at least on the front level. Their top three guys are as athletic as anyone's three, and then their blitz packages have been expanding off of that. And that alone, given the way Jacksonville's been playing, that alone was probably enough to end it. And I think that could have been the analysis here. But, you know, if you got more to say – let's open up a bottle of red wine. Let's get some Ben and Jerry's ice cream, and let's just let you keep doing this show.
How about eggnog and Cliff bars?
That's eggnog and Cliff bars.
Well,
now
I
you just
for.
Need help.
Candy corn?
Not funny anymore. It's
candy corn.
Now, yeah. No, too late. Wrong time of year. It's
no, I stash it. I keep it in a safe year round.
Right.
No, it feels like I'm more talking about an X. I'm just obsessed with the 2017 Jaguars now.
The Bills will be back next week, folks. We will not be doing this again.
Will.
What's our next game?
Let's go Denver and the Chargers. The Chargers, I don't know, Andy. They've got a cushion. They're two games up on the rest of the wild card race. This felt like the type of game that the Chargers tend to lose when they need to win it. This feels like a harbinger of bad things.
I don't know, but it's the first time they've lost all season to a team with a losing record. I don't think they've beaten a team with a winning record yet either. The two teams that got them were Kansas City and the Rams. So it's hard to know, are we looking at an elite Charger team or just another good, not great one? The big thing in this game, Garrett, was the Von Miller play. The interception that Von Miller had – reading the quick screen. There were two plays involving Von Miller on a quick screen that Phillip Rivers will hate himself for watching the film. And he doesn't need to see the film. He already knows exactly what happened. One was the Miller interception, where Miller was just ready for that screen. Quarterback needs to confirm that. The other was when the Chargers were trying to run out the clock, around 2 minutes to go in the game. Rivers had a third and seven-ish, something like that, third and medium. He went back to that screen again. Denver's out of timeouts. Miller once again took away the screen, and Rivers, instead of eating the ball so the clock could run and at least get the clock down to about 1:10 left for Denver, he threw it into the turf because that's what his instinct took over. The second it did, he berated himself for it. But those were the two biggest plays in the game, is Von Miller recognizing screen passes, and then Case Keenum on that final drive. I don't react about three or four times a year. There's stuff that happens on games that make me react out loud like I used to when I was just a fan growing up. Mm-hmm. I don't get to do that very often. Case Keenum on that final drive, some of those throws, I did react out loud. The one to Sutton was outstanding. I think Keenum's a better player when he's in wing it mode. Right? Even that we talk all the time about you got to scheme with Keenum, build off the running game. I think he's a better player when he's just in wing it Brett Favre kind of mode.
Yeah, no, I could see that. He does this every once in a while, and I guess that it makes you feel that way. Sometimes it's I get a little bit of a Ryan Fitzpatrick vibe off of him, which I know sounds terrible on this day considering what Fitzpatrick did on Sunday in the Meadowlands. But
but they're similar because they're both kind of shorter QBs, and I've always felt like there's a caffeinated feel to Fitzpatrick's game. It's just so unnerving, even when it goes well. And when he's not as jittery as Fitzpatrick, because he doesn't move as much, but I know exactly what you're saying, and Keenum can make you feel that way at times. So I do think he's better in wing it mode, or at least that's how it looks from afar. But if you're Bill Musgrave, their offensive coordinator, you can't build an offense off of that, because he's not good enough to win every single down in wing it mode. So it's a fine line there. The only guy I know who's really ever was able to just win in wing it mode is two of them. They both played for the Packers. One still plays for the Packers.
Yeah. Aaron Rodgers and Don Majkowski.
Yes, thank you. That's exactly who I was thinking of.
This game, 479 yards for the Chargers to 325 for the Broncos. Chargers went 9 for 15 on third down. I mean, they really did control this game, but you know, the 14 penalties and the two turnovers.
Yep. Those third downs, they were like 3rd and 8, 3rd and 12 even, and there was one-on-one coverage that Rivers kept finding, and Gates was the guy a few times, and then they've got such big wide receivers there. They're equipped to win on third down. Tyrell Williams, Mike Williams, Keenan Allen. I'm not worried about the Chargers, Gary. If anything, I'm worried about their defense a little bit. The one thing that makes me worry, I'm not ready to say, oh, they're teasing us again, but the defense with Bosa back today – and Ingram, who's been there all year, they did nothing on that final drive and nothing really in the second half of the game from the pass rush standpoint, even though they were in obvious passing situations. And Denver had three new starters on the interior of their offensive line because so many guys have gotten hurt. So Bosa back, Ingram in there, and your pass rush could not beat their backup offensive line. By the way, their tackles have not been great there in Denver this year anyway. So that gives me some concern. If the Chargers' pass rush isn't better, the defense won't go far at all.
I did wonder if Bosa was a little bit fatigued in this one.
Maybe. He made some plays. I mean, he looked like Bosa at times.
Early, though. I felt like he looked like Bosa early.
And, that's fair.
Not so much late. But I will say, before that Von Miller interception, I really thought the Chargers were just going to pull away and win this one by 20-something points. That play was humongous. So was the fact that he ran it back 42 yards at a time when the offense was really not generating anything for them.
Absolutely. That's nice. The biggest play in the game without quest, the biggest play in Denver's season in some respects.
Nice win. Vance Joseph's first road win on a Sunday or Monday as a Broncos coach, so nice work there. Before we move on, Andy, just a couple of really quick programming notes. It's Thanksgiving week, so we are doing some shuffling to try to serve your needs as well as possible. The Gambling Show, that is myself, Jimmy Trina, and Scott Grambling, we are doing a special episode covering all the Week 12 games, including Thanksgiving matchups. That is coming out Tuesday morning. Usually you get Gambling Show on Friday. You're going to get it on Tuesday this week. The MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. That is Bert, Jenny Brentis, and Connor Orr covering all the biggest headlines from around the league. That show will come out on Wednesday, as it always does. I don't know why I built that up so much. The thing that's going to blow your mind is the Deep Dive podcast. That's when Andy and I preview the Week 12 headliner games, plus the mini mailbag. That show will come out Friday this week instead of the usual Thursday. And this show, the Monday Morning NFL podcast, it's already out. It came out on Monday, and that's you're listening to it right now. So you should have already known that. But yeah, Gambling Show on Tuesday, Breer, Jenny, and Connor on Wednesday, and then the Deep Dive podcast on Friday instead of Thursday. So if you do celebrate Thanksgiving, enjoy your Thursday and enjoy the games that day.
Before the show got going, and we waited on you, and he said, hold on, guys, just a minute. I'm writing up these promos here for the new shows, the new show schedule. So you wrote this down. That's what you came up with preparation.
I don't want to say, so I write out the ads. This I just like jotted down. No, it's very difficult to, because I also jotted down like when each show is taping, because I need to know that for each one. It's a mess. My life is a mess.
Yeah. I don't mean to be picking on you so much tonight. I won't get after you again. And I appreciate that you did not fit Jacksonville into the show promos there or any of the ad reads either. So that's you're really grown.
There's lots of show to go, though, Andy. Six more games left here. Let's go Houston at Washington. This was one of the games we previewed on last week's Deep Dive show. We kind of talked about how Houston would have a big edge. Look, nice work by Washington. They, I don't want to sound condescending. They were a 6-3 team. They were outmanned in this one, and they stuck around. And this was this ended up being a fairly winnable game for them. They did have a 63-yard field goal attempt at the end that came up short. Didn't help that Dustin Hopkins was kicking injured today anyway, but. They hung around, which is what they seem to do. They are, my comp for them, Andy. They're the 2017 Buffalo Bills.
Okay, here we go.
They get a comp
very
too.
Good. We worried about their offensive line, a makeshift O-line, which actually had been playing well given their circumstances, but a makeshift O-line that's well-coached and overachieving still we didn't think would be enough against Houston's really dominant D-line. And we saw that. Adrian Peterson, 16 runs, 51 yards. Redskins passers combined, 18 out of 39 passing. They were sacked five times. So just not the right matchup. And then we have to now shift the discussion to what's next for Washington and what's next, unfortunately, for Alex Smith.
Yeah, gosh, it just a brutal injury for Alex Smith. And I honestly would dissuade anyone who wants to go look this up online to please do not watch that injury. It was an ugly broken leg, broken ankle. He will be out for the year. Short term, it's going to be Colt McCoy, and it sounds like they are going to roll with Colt McCoy, and they are going to, the names that they were bringing in to work out as backups are guys who are clearly backups. But McCoy did look, he led two touchdown drives. Granted, one was short because a turnover set it up, but he did put together a touchdown drive. It did some scrambling, made a couple throws in spots. He's been in the system the entire time Jay Gruden's been there.
That's a big deal.
I don't want to speak ill of Alex Smith, especially after the horrible thing he did to him. And I'm not going to say Colt McCoy's an upgrade in any way, shape, or form, but I feel like it's not much of a downgrade.
I don't think they have to change their style of play. And Colt McCoy has stepped in and has performed admirably as a backup before. That's why he's here. He's here for exactly this. You don't want him to have to do this. You want your starter healthy, but that's why Colt McCoy's here. That's why they didn't go out. They haven't drafted a backup in a lot of years. They haven't tried to develop anyone. They haven't signed anybody. They'll bring someone in because they need a number two. But Colt McCoy is their best option right now because remember, there's 10 other guys out there playing football. Those guys have been practicing these certain plays, these certain formations. You've got to run that. You can't just plug in a new QB and then tailor everything to him on the fly. I mean, that's really rare to do that. And if that QB, if you are going to do that, he's got to have a skill set that nobody else has. It's the Lamar Jackson discussion. And even then, Lamar Jackson's been around Baltimore for several months. They didn't just sign him off the street this week and then change the offense. So I don't think there's any decision what to do at QB. You go with Colt McCoy and you see how it goes. And it's a huge game now for them coming up on Thanksgiving with Dallas having won.
Yep. No, and certainly there was no other option this week with the short week. That was actually Colt McCoy's last win as a starter back in 2014 when he beat Tony Romo and the Cowboys in overtime at Dallas. So I
remember
that
game.
Monday night
game
too.
I watched that game with Sean McVay in the offseason, and I learned a lot about the details of quarterbacking, and it was Colt McCoy that I learned it from. He does things the right way that coaches like.
Interesting. Going to be an interesting Thanksgiving Day game here. Let's go. Let's keep it in the NFC East. Everyone's been waiting for the Eagles to sort of reemerge and take control of this division. If they do, today was not a part of it. They got blown out in New Orleans. This was they were completely overmatched, as the Saints have done to a couple teams this year, but the Eagles just, you know, number one, they lost Jason Kelce in this game. We'll see what kind of a timetable there is with his injury. He had some sort of arm injury, and the offense just did absolutely nothing for Philadelphia in this one. But the back end of that Eagles defense, I mean, they had a couple more injuries today. Avante Maddox went down. Sidney Jones went down. They are not capable of stopping teams right now.
And a year ago, their pass rush probably would have hidden it at least a little bit. And that has not been the case this season. It's not a bad pass rush, but it's not that Super Bowl pass rush this year for whatever reason.
Yeah, it kind of reminds you of when the Broncos just – that pass rush like slid back ever so slightly after the Super Bowl season, and it just made such a big difference when you don't have that sort of otherworldly defense up front. But yeah, this
such
is
a fine line, isn't it, in football?
It is.
Pro football?
It is. It really is. It's so difficult, especially on the defensive side of the ball, to be able to stand on your head the way the Eagles front four did a year ago, or looked at, if I could bring back to the Jaguars, who I don't know if we talked about them on the show, similarly. kind of just, you fall off slightly and the whole thing just sort of falls apart. But yeah, Saints, by the way, they are just a juggernaut right now. I mean, Drew Brees is, it's going to be a really interesting MVP debate when we get to the end of the season.
Yes,
if he and
will.
Mahomes keep up on this pace here, because either of them would have won unanimously with a season like this a year ago when Brady kind of, Brady was clearly MVP, but, wasn't playing at quite the level that these guys are this year.
Well, that debate's going to be short. It's a smart debate, but it's going to be short, unfortunately, because what voters will likely do is take the new guy fresh off the street, because they become a little bit numb to Breeze, and we forget, Breeze has better stuff around him, when that's part of the reason, if he even does, it's because he's built that. Breeze has built what the Saints offense is, and that will probably work against him for the MVP debate, because people notice and vote for the guy who's new and flashy onto the scene. He just feels more valuable because this offense didn't do anything before Mahomes was here, and now he's here, so wow, he's the most valuable guy. Versus the Saints having sustained success and then taking it up a notch, that might make Breeze better than Mahomes, but it's not sexier or more impressive. So, and I have no problem with Mahomes if someone voted him, but I don't think it's going to be a close race, even though it should be.
Ooh, see, I disagree a little bit, because I think there's a sentimentality to voting for Drew Brees. He's never won the award. I think people want to give it to him. I think there are a lot of people who will end up swaying that. Remember when like Brett Favre got a vote the year that Brady set all the records and stuff like that? There's always a little bit of a sentimentality thing going here. Not that Brees would only win based on sentimentality this year, but I think that's going to cancel out the newness of Mahomes. Also, what Mahomes does against the Rams.
But we don't think of Breeze as an old man. He might be old. Brett Favre felt like an old man that year. He was gray. He'd been gone. I think he even had a grandson on the way or grandchild. Or something. I mean, Brett Favre was such a unique story. And then it's amazing he's playing well because we thought he was retired 10,000 times. We've never had that with Breeze. He's been steady Eddie. He still looks pretty young. He plays the same way, which I think makes it easier to overlook his greatness. And then when people do talk about how amazing it is that he's better now than he was 10 years ago, when they take that concept, the conversation becomes Tom Brady.
I give you a bit of a, I don't know if I'm buying that, Andy. Yeah, I don't know if I'm buying that. We'll see, though. We'll see. We'll see. Obviously, what they do, they both have primetime games this calendar week here. So, what you do in the spotlight plays into it too. But one more game here before the lightning round. The Lions have now knocked off Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, and now Cam Newton at home. This one, 20-19. Lions played well in this. I mean, look, they've been a mess the last couple of weeks. They traded Golden Tate. It looked like they had given up on the season, and then they come up with this win. They got a bit of an assist. Graham Gano, who, of course, Graham Gano won a game with a 63-yarder for the Panthers back against the Giants, so you don't want to pick on him too much, but he missed a 34-yard field goal. He also missed a PAT. The Panthers, when they scored, when they were down 7 late in the final 2 minutes of this game, they decided to go for 2 in the win rather than risk it with Gano and go for 1, and they do not get the 2-point conversion, and that was it for this one. But Panthers Thursday night is always a bit of a fluke. I feel back-to-back now on the road. I mean, there's not a whole lot of margin for error in the NFC. They gotta turn this around pretty quick here.
Yeah, they do. Their defense was better today than it was against Pittsburgh, certainly. I have no problem with Ron Rivera and his decision about going for 2, which is, yep, I believe you go for 2 on the road. Now, maybe he wasn't confident in his kicker, and that's why he really did it, but what he's presenting to us, I accept at face value. That missed throw on the 2-point conversion, we say it all the time. Cam Newton, you get a few of those every week. He's going to be wild and high on some balls, and you don't know when they come. And the Panthers, you're just equipped to live with it, but sometimes you can't live with it. And today was one of those, at least on that play, it was one of those sometimes.
Yep. Now, he did some nice work at the comeback, but he absolutely missed that throw at the end. Andy, let's go to the lightning-ish round. Let's start in Tennessee. A quick note on this one, and look, the Colts looked fantastic again. They absolutely blew out the Titans in this one. Dean Pease was actually hospitalized and is apparently being we tape on Sunday night. He's apparently being observed overnight, so we hope he is doing all right. The Titans defensive coordinator, but the Titans never quite showed up in this one. It was scoreless for the first quarter, and then the Colts just sort of blew this one open. I should say they did get their first touchdown late in the first quarter, so technically it was not a scoreless first quarter, but the Colts just ran away with this one. And T.Y. Hilton, a little more work downfield in this one, which certainly, I mean, just more encouraging signs for this Colts team.
It's a 3-horse race for MVP, I think. I think Andrew Luck's in that conversation. I don't think he'll get it. I wouldn't vote for him now ahead of the other two guys, but I think those are the 3 QBs that are standing out the most for that award right now.
He's your Ralph Nader. Marcus Mariota, some sort of hand injury, arm injury. It was unclear what it was. Obviously, they play Monday night next week, and we'll see what that injury is. But Blaine Gabbert came in this one for the second half, but this one it was kind of out of reach at this point. Tampa Bay at New York Giants. Giants get the win in this one, 38-35. I'm sure it was very nice for the Giants to go up against yet another team that just didn't really have much of a pass rush. And so they got things going. Saquon Barkley had a monster game here. Ryan Fitzpatrick benched again. 3 interceptions. The Bucks 2 more times in this game brought the ball into scoring range. One time Fitzpatrick got stopped on a 4th-and-inches sneak. He also threw an interception. Back to Jameis Winston, I guess.
Yeah, they'll have to have that conversation. It's an ugly situation there. And hey, you were right, by the way. Remember, I was all over you early in the season for saying the Bucs were a sinking ship. I think you intended the pun, if I recall.
And I didn't.
They started 2-0. Hmm? You did not?
I didn't intend the pun. I said the thing. I didn't intend the pun, though.
Well, were you aware that the pun existed at the time?
I don't think I said they were a sinking ship. I think I said I like saying the going off the rails, I feel like, is my go-to saying for teams in this situation.
It's happened. It's happened. You know how many games this year? They've had 5 games this year where they've had 29 or more first downs in the game. Coming into the season, they had 4 games in the entire franchise history with 29 first downs. This year, they've had 5 games, and in those 5 games, they're 1-4. So I guess all their success on offense is killing them.
This was the 5th time this season they had 500 yards, and they're 1-4 in those games.
It's turnovers, and it's as simple as that.
29 turnovers through 10 games now. Last game of the day. This is Oakland goes to Arizona and gets a win. So nice to see the Raiders get back in the win column here. This one was the Cardinals had all sorts of issues blocking up the Raiders here. So I guess it was encouraging to see that Raiders front four get a little bit of pressure going here. They end up winning 23-21 on a last-second field goal by Daniel Carlson, who you might remember from earlier in the season. The rookie had some issues kicking for the Vikings. He gets it done for the Raiders in this one. And I guess all anyone's going to talk about is Derek Carr and John Gruden had some very animated conversations on the sideline. I don't know if it's good or bad or just probably has no impact on anything.
That's Gruden has done that before. Remember the way he and Rich Gannon used to scream at each other during the games? I mean, it was like they were like the friend you had whose parents were always bickering and fighting in front of everybody and had no shame about it. That's how Gannon and Gruden used to be. And I know there were people around the NFL. So the assumption is, okay, that's the way Gruden is. So then the question and what people around the NFL were wondering is, will Carr respond well to that? Is that the right kind of approach for Derek Carr? And I think everyone I've heard who has been around Carr, has coached him or knows Gruden, they thought, no, it's not going to be the right way. That's not the right approach for leading with Carr. That's how Gruden is, though. And that's Mark Davis needs to know that. I'm sure he did know that when he made the hire. I don't know if he had any conversations with people who'd been around Carr about what kind of leader Carr needs for his personality. I'm not sure that's the right approach.
Last note on this game was I know we talked about this guy in the past, Andy. Jermaine Gresham. Jermaine Gresham picked up the most boneheaded penalty you could possibly pick up. Cardinals were trying to bleed the clock. They would have gotten it down to the 2-minute warning before a third down, and Gresham picked up a personal foul. He was trying to throw someone off of Larry Fitzgerald after a play and ended up picking up a 15-yard penalty, which not only cost him the yardage but also gave the Raiders, who were out of timeouts, a free timeout, which ended up being pretty big.
Neither do I, and I'm going to tell you why. I've heard two stories about Jermaine, not stories, but just commentaries about him by people who have coached him before, and he's been in the NFL a long time now. One of them said the guy is the ultimate alpha male. He is the man in the room, and we love him because he dominates with his aura. He's got that kind of personality. He's the alpha that every team needs. The other guy who told me about Gresham, and this was before the alpha male guy, this was a few years ago, said, and if we might have to edit this out because I don't know if I'm allowed to say this kind of thing or not, but he said he's a mental midget. That was the term he used for Jermaine Gresham, meaning if something ever went wrong, you lose Gresham. Remember, there's a playoff game years ago when the Texans played the Bengals, and the first play in the game, I want to say very early in the game, Gresham dropped the ball, and I know some of the people on that staff thought, oh, great, well, we've lost Gresham for the game because he's not going to bounce back from that, not on the first play. So those are the two things I've heard of Jermaine Gresham, almost polar opposites. I don't know what to make of the guy either.
I think we've actually had this exact conversation about him before because he just does this like once a year. It's the only time we talk about
him. I haven't said mental midget before because I never had the guts. But I'm quoting somebody there. I don't know if it's – I mean, it's politically incorrect. It's way incorrect.
Yes.
But that was – you know, you're going to hear that stuff in football locker rooms. That's what they called him around someone who's coached him before has called him that.
All right. Well, that brings us to the thing of the week. Andy, do you have a thing of the week?
I will by the time you know how this goes. I don't ever remember this last little bit of the show. I'm checking my phone now. I'm getting ready to sign out. You give me yours and I'll think of something to say. And
mine was sprinkled in throughout the show and it was not the Jaguars and it was not the Bills. It's the fact that I think in the Bears and the Cowboys, we have two defenses who maybe when we get to January football, can reverse the, sort of go against the narrative of offense is just going to dominate the entire 2018 season. I think there's something to be said for teams that have sort of found an old school way to win games because they've been forced to do so. And we'll see what these teams can do in January when they have to go up against the Saints and the Rams. I think if nothing else, it'll be interesting to see the contrast in style, especially if a team like that can get an early lead in a postseason game.
Yeah. I'll bring it back to the Bears as well since we opened the show with them. Conceptually, when you are – I think they're borderline dependent on misdirection stuff, and everyone's talking the misdirection this year. They're not only that, but if you took that out of their offense, I do think the offense dries up. So in some respects, they are only that. When you're dependent on misdirection, I think you're vulnerable to defensive adjustments because the defense eventually settles in. And we've seen a lot of times this year the Bears have looked a lot better early in the game than they have late in the game. We did see that a little bit again tonight. Now, they won it. They're getting better. But the difference between the Bears and the Chiefs, if you took the misdirection away from the Chiefs, they've still got a gunslinger MVP caliber QB. They've got a mismatched tight end. They've got a sustaining running back. And they've got at least one dominant receiver and probably two if you're counting Sammy Watkins. So it's the Bears are more reliant on their scheme than the Chiefs are on theirs. And I don't think that's a great thing, and it's something to keep in mind.
It's a narrow path to victory for the Bears. Yeah, they're winning games. I do still wonder about what happens if they fall behind a quality opponent. Probably nothing good. That's it. That's a show. As I mentioned before, we will be back on Friday this week. Deep dive show on Friday instead of Thursday. Gambling show goes a little bit earlier. We're going Tuesday this week with gambling, and Breer, Jenny, and Connor will be with you on Wednesday. It's a special lineup for Thanksgiving. So please, since the two of us won't talk to you until then, enjoy the Thanksgiving games. Enjoy your family if you do something. Enjoy food if you eat. Even if you don't eat a Thanksgiving meal, just have something good to eat. Thanks to this episode's sponsors, Hair Club and Robin Hood. Please support them the way they support us. Thanks to our researchers, Reed Foster and Ryan Taylor, for making us sound smart. And thank you, as always, to producer Shelby Royston, as well as the guys at Cadence 13, who make us sound good every week. Most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. You are the best. Send those questions in for the deep dive show on Friday. We'll have the mini mailbag. Talk back at the MMQB.com or Twitter, Andy_Benoit or GRambling_SI. We are also on Facebook if you want to send it there. And please subscribe to the MMQB NFL Podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Radio.com, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys on Friday.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.